Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 25th of May 2014. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Johnny Fox, Paul in London, and Phil from the West End Whingers.
We're now going to talk about Positive, which is a play by Sean Kitchener on at the Waterloo East Theatre. It has a rather extraordinary looking poster, and that's about all I know about it, unfortunately. John, can you tell me more about this and what you thought of it?
You'd have to tell me what the poster looks like, because I went on the strength of the advance word about the writing rather than seeing a picture of it. However, what it is it's yet another gay play, and I'm afraid I went to it with a slightly heavy heart, thinking that it would be another one of this very typical genre, but it isn't. It's much better than that. It is a piece which was written by, as you say, Sean Kitchener, a young man who comes from the Royal Court Young Writers Programme, and it shows in the quality of the writing. He has written a piece about a young man who he calls Benji, which I think makes him sound like a boxer puppy rather than the hero of a play. But he is a conventional young gay man. But from an unfortunate one-night stand, he has contracted HIV, and this has stifled his going out and completely made him a shut-in for a year, whereupon he takes control of his life again and decides that he must reinvigorate his social life, and he goes out. And when he goes out, he meets in a club a completely ignorant tosser who first of all wants to get into his pants until he's told he, in inverted commas, must use the condom, when he freaks out in a ignorant and aggressive and unsympathetic way. At the same time, HIV has touched the lives and strained the relationship of Benji's landlady, who is a charity worker in Africa and lives with her heterosexual partner. And although theirs is a less convincing story, I think it's very good that the piece takes the issue of HIV outside the gay ghetto, as few such plays have done that I've seen anyway in the past. I think it's a shame that this piece isn't running for 3 weeks, because it would be extremely eligible if it met that run threshold to be considered for the Off West End Awards, where I'm quite sure the writing and even some of the acting would pick up some nominations. The cast is headed, if you like, by a boy called Timothy George playing the character of Benji. He is tousled and blonde and slim and wiry and has the most gorgeous smile. And it's obvious that the entire audience would gladly take him home, I have to say, including the lady in the wheelchair, who is obviously one of the very, very, very local patrons of Waterloo East Theatre, and took the dialogue so literally. And it is a tribute to the writing, really, that she was so involved with it. She was joining in. And I think she quite happily had thrown Timothy George over the back of her wheelchair and taken him home. But once you get past that, he is also a very good actor, and he carries the arc of his dramatic journey extremely well. And his reactions, particularly his angry and frustrated reactions, are really very good and very, very natural. And natural is the thing I want to say about this, that it is extremely naturalistic, and you can see in Sean Kitchener's writing influences of other Royal Court graduates like David Eldridge or Mike Bartlett. So that's real praise for the writing, but also for the performing, and for the fact that I probably haven't mentioned this yet, it's a comedy. It is a hysterical comedy. It is really, really funny, both in the situations and particularly in the dialogue. And some of the exchanges between the unpolitically correct young man who has discovered that Benji has HIV and therefore can't have sex with him is, I mean, they're really rude, but they're really, really funny. He says, when he discovers that he can't carry on with what they were starting to do, he's horrified, and he says, "I almost stuck my nice clean carrot into your hummus of death." It's just a brilliant line. And it is the broader and less politically correct lines that get the best laughs. And I think this is a great move forward in a very, very strong tradition. You know, go right back to Torch Song Trilogy, if you like, of gay plays. And it means that we've finally confronted and can laugh at HIV and AIDS. And if we can laugh at it, maybe we're beating it. Paul, you were there. Tell me what you thought.
Yes, I think the best thing about this piece is that it is a comedy, because a couple of weeks earlier I had seen two very different types of AIDS-related plays. There were two shorts that were done in the I think they were done in the early 80s, and HIV was treated as a death sentence, and because it was at that time. And it was interesting to see those, to reflect on how things have changed in 30 years. But what I think was nice about this entire play was how it brought out that, sure, you know, when you get HIV, it is lifestyle changing. There are things that you that now have to do differently, but you still can have a life. And I think that was the really positive outcome of this, of the whole piece, which was, you know, people have to get on with their lives. And there was a message, I think, in Sean Kitchener's piece that, you know, there is still, you still need to live life and get out there, because we're introduced to Benji at the beginning. It's been a year after he's been diagnosed and he doesn't go out. He just sits at home and listens to Britney Spears music, and he becomes quite an aficionado on everything to do with Britney Spears, because it's a way of sort of escaping the world and escaping dealing with people. And the play is sort of around his gradual going back out and meeting people and falling in love again. And I think it's a wonderful message. And, of course, it is quite funny. And I think the line about the carrot and in the homeless of death was particularly inspired. But I think Sean Kitchener, as a writer, it'll be interesting to see where his work goes, because he's quite funny. And he's also the love interest in the piece. And he was quite funny as an actor as well. So all told, it was an incredibly enjoyable piece and quite refreshing to see such a positive tale out of a serious subject.
I should point out that the poster is a rather energetic kiss between the, presumably between the two main male characters.
Yes, I've just looked that up. Yeah, you can see that on various websites. They do look like they're going for it, but that's
a kiss between Benji and the guy who won't put his carrot in Benji's hummus.
Hummus of death. Yeah, yes. Yeah. So that was before the hummus comes out. Yeah. Or the carrot, for that matter.
Yes, I have to say that apart from that line, one of the things that I appreciated most about the play is it's very funny, but it isn't very camp, which is also very unusual for the genre, that it stayed away from even Orton-esque camp, especially in the character played by Sally George, who is Benji's sort of Daily Mail reading mother, a character called Margot. And again, there would have been a very easy opportunity to score silly points off Home County's attitudes like hers. But she's drawn as a real character, and Sally George's performance is spot on. Very, very good indeed. As are quite a few of the other cameos. I thought that Paul Helis, who plays the heterosexual boyfriend of Benji's landlady, it's the most lightly drawn character, but I thought he got a great deal out of it and very, very credible. There's a lot of dialogue between Benji and his sort of counsellor or support worker, and that was just an area where I would have liked to have seen a bit of rewriting, because it felt a bit... She didn't feel quite realistic. But other than that, yeah.
I think that's a device too, isn't it, in the play, because she has to convey a lot of technical information to the audience about the HIV status, and so you do get the feeling that that's the serious part of it, to mix with the relationships and, you know, getting on with life. But you know, she's there for a reason more than you know, being able to be a fully fledged character.
Yeah. Should just talk about the structure, that this started out at Edinburgh, I think last year, as a 60-minute piece, and has now been stretched to just about 2 hours, including an interval. Both Paul and I thought that a fresh look at the script might reshape it into something like an 80 or 90-minute piece that ran straight through. Although because of the release of the information about the HIV status of the landlady coming quite late in the drama, I can understand why they felt an interval might be useful. And it does give you quite a lot of chance to chat about it. And, you know, even in a small audience, a lot of people were having serious conversations about the implications of the plot. And that's again, really good work.
Mm. Having said that, I think you can see, obviously, in its iterations, though, the references to Britney Spears and sort of that sort of element of humour has evolved into a much more human situational comedy rather than specific jokes, I think. And I still think it could probably do with a little bit of a trim and get it down to about 90 minutes, and we could all be home, even without a discussion in an interval.
We're now going to talk about The Pyjama Game, which is on at the Shaftesbury Theatre. This is a musical based on 7.5 cents by Richard Bissell and has a score by Richard Adler and Jerry Ross. Phil, tell me more about this and what you thought of it.
Well, I've never seen The Pyjama Game, although it has been on, I think it was on at the Victoria Palace in what was supposed to be a terrible production by Simon Callow. And I was looking forward to it because it sounded my kind of show, because it's got some really well-known songs in it. There's Hey There, Once a Year Day, Hernandez Hideaway. And I love Joanna Riding. I love Michael Xavier. Everything about it was sort of was attractive. And when the reviews came out, which were sort of pretty much across the board 4- and 5-star reviews, I was quite surprised because it felt like it wasn't the show that I saw. I just didn't get it. I wasn't amused. I was quite bored by it. I thought there's nothing wrong with the production as such. The songs are great. They're well performed. But I just couldn't engage with it. I didn't think it was funny enough. It felt quite old and creaking, the plot. And obvious, not that that really matters in these sort of shows. It's kind of musical comedy for you. I didn't even like the set. I thought the set looked like a sort of a transfer from a small venue in Chichester, which it was at the Minerva Theatre, I think, there. I also found the where we were sitting in the stools wasn't really the best place to appreciate the choreography, because Stephen Mears choreography is a brilliant choreographer, I think, and I don't think we got the best of it. We were a bit too close and to the side. And also, there's this annoying thing with where the cast sort of rush on and off the stage and up these stairs at the side of the stage, which was, if you're sitting near them, was just annoying, particularly during the steam heat number, because the cast are sort of off stage watching it and they're making noise and chatting. And it was too close to us, so it was distracting from the number. I thought there was a lot of things where they should have adapted it for the Shaftesbury Theatre better to fit it in that space and not try and open it out, as it obviously was at Chichester. I went in a group of people. I thought it might have been just me, but most of the people I went with didn't like it. In fact, two left at the interval because they were hating it so much. I just can't see how it's going to fill the Shaftesbury Theatre.
John, what did you think about it?
I approached it slightly differently because I thought I loved The Pyjama Game. It's, as Phil says, it's got 10 or 12 great songs in it. And I am quite a fan of the Doris Day movie, which comes on television every now and again. And I can sing along, you know, I know all the words to 7.5 cents. And I think it's quite ironic that a play about an industrial dispute should turn into such a lively, upbeat musical. I can't imagine, I know, Bob Crowe and the RMT turning into quite such an entertaining piece.
But they did quite well with Billy Elliot, though.
Yeah, yes. And there are other industrial, you know, Les Miserables, in a way, is a kind of protest strike based piece as well, so it's not without precedent. But this is a garment factory in, I think it's either Ohio or Iowa. It's certainly one of the Corn Belt states. So you're sort of in that Oklahoma territory of corn-fed, rosy-cheeked Americans. But I didn't like this production either, I'm afraid. It didn't do it for me, and I can't quite analyse why. Phil just mentioned the set, and given that everything about Pyjama Game is quite unrealistic, I didn't like the over-realistic set. It looked like the factory from Schindler's List, and you're expecting it to be as depressing and dour as that. And to have all the sort of jolly singing and dancing in front of such a very, very industrial, dismal-looking factory didn't really seem, I don't know, it didn't work for me. I also thought that there were too many clichés of people being pushed around on swivel chairs and sewing machines and hampers full of fabrics. I thought it was choreographically clichéd, except the thing I think that Stephen Mears did do was a brilliant merging of the original choreography. I don't know if you know that the piece was adjusted by George Abbott, the director, to make way for the career of his untried choreographic protege, a 25-year-old Bob Fosse. And that's why the show incorporates completely irrelevant musical numbers, like Hernando's Hideaway, set in a low-lit Latin nightclub, absolutely unlikely to be frequented by Ohio machinists, and the other one where they interrupt the strike meeting about where they decide they're going to down tools unless they get their 7.5 cents an hour to showcase steam heat and the dance moves of three cast members in a boiler room, none of which has anything to do with the furtherance of the plot, but which did provide a platform for Fosse to show off his choreographic skills. So Stephen Mears has done a really great job for embracing that and blending it with what I think are nice hints of the rock and roll era, which is about to erupt. And if you take the routine for There Once Was a Man, it's a duet between Michael Xavier and Joanna Riding, I think it's really smart, and it's just nicely heraldic of the sort of blue suede shoes era that's about to come. Just talk about the leads for a moment. I don't think anyone would be, Joanna herself would not be cross if I mentioned the fact that here she is at 47, still playing romantic leads. You know, this is remarkable because the musical theatre is terribly ageist, and it's sensational that she can prove herself every bit as vocally and physically fit as a very dynamic young ensemble. That unless you're sat in the front two rows, there is probably no evidence of her age.
Can I just say, I was sat in probably the second row, and I did have a bit of a problem with her age. It seemed a bit ludicrous to me. I mean, I think she's terrific. She sings, she dances, she's very likable. But I just kept thinking about her age. She just seemed too old for the role. I wanted somebody, because of the character and the kind of the musical comedy, I wanted a sort of an ingenue kind of person.
I don't think the role of Babe Williams is written for an ingenue, because she is the union boss. She is a woman who has, I think, previously been either married or in a relationship. So I think she's probably meant to be about 35, so rather than an absolute juvenile. But I think there is quite a mismatch between several of the, in inverted commas, couples. If you take Peter Polycarpou playing Heinze, the time and motion man in the factory, his love interest is the boss's secretary, Gladys, who is the girl who sings and dances Steam Heat and appeared to be about 50 years his junior. So since there is nothing in the drama about him dating a younger woman, it just felt really, really odd. And in fact, I think quite a few people in the audience didn't get who was coupled with whom, because Heinze, for example, does a wonderful routine with Claire Machin, who plays the feisty office manager Mabel, and they have a wonderful duet called I'll Never Be Jealous Again. And they make a really good theatrical couple, but they're not a romantic couple in the story. So it's all a bit hodgepodge really for me, and the thing that rescued it, if you like, was Michael Xavier's performance. Having seen him give us his Captain Von Trapp at the Open Air a couple of years ago, I was also a bit hesitant that he might have seemed a bit mature for playing the very young manager who, but he is a puppy-eyed giant, and he's so relaxed and so charming and so physically loose in this piece that it really, really suited the role of the superintendent, Sid Sorokin. Although, you know, yet again, poor man, what's he, 190 centimetres, and so used to arching his back to embrace diminutive leading ladies, he'll soon be able to play Richard III without prosthetics.
Actually, I will just say, because I've been very negative about it, I did love his duet with himself, with Hey There, which was absolutely delightful. He duets with himself on the dictaphone, which I don't know if that's how the song is normally done. Do you know, John?
I think it is, yes. It's a wire recorder, isn't it, in the original?
Oh, so it is done like that. It wasn't.
It is done much, much more beautifully in this than I've seen it done before.
Yeah, I thought it was absolutely charming, and I thought, I think he was the best thing in it for me.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.